tweet at Saturday RTE.
Now, President Michael D. Higgins said this week that the state must bear primary responsibility for what happened in mother and baby homes. Many people are still working their way through that 3,000-page report from the Mother and Baby Homes Commission that landed this week. We asked the Commission for a spokesperson or a statement yesterday, and they told us that the Commission does not intend to comment on its report. But we are joined now by Dr. Conor O'Mahony, Special Rapporteur on Child Protection and Director of the Child Law Clinic at UCC. Thanks for joining us, Conor.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Conor, the key issue for a lot of people in this has been the access to birth information. We know now from yesterday that the Attorney General has said that a referendum is not required for survivors of mother and baby homes to get access to their birth certs. Would you agree with that?
I would, Katie. I mean, that's a position that I've taken on this issue for some time now. And back in 2015, at the time, I was asked to appear before the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Health and Children, which was looking at draft legislation at that time. And I expressed that view then, as did others. And, you know, quite a number of people have agreed on that. Now, it was very welcome yesterday that the current Attorney General expressed the view that we don't need a referendum. I suppose what we're waiting to see is how, you know, conditional or unconditional that position is, because his two predecessors had both indicated that the Oireachtas could enact a law on adoption tracing on condition that certain things were contained in the bill, which would act as preconditions to access to information. And those preconditions, a lot of us would have, in the field would have argued, were not necessary, and they were objected to by
what kind of preconditions were they talking about?
So the original one in 2015 was that an undertaking would have to be given not to attempt to contact a birth parent who didn't want to be contacted. That was advised by Maura Whelan that would be necessary, and survivors objected to that. They said, look, this is our information. We shouldn't have to sign a legal undertaking in order to get that. The last Attorney General, Seamus Wolfe, had suggested that birth parents should have an opportunity to raise an objection in court if they didn't want a birth cert to be provided. And that, again, it didn't seem to be really properly supported by the law that was there. And, you know, was again another hurdle being placed in the way of adopted people seeking to access their records. So, you know, so yesterday's news was positive, but, you know, we will wait and see whether, you know, as I say, it's unconditional.
And in terms of the right of birth mothers to their privacy, to not be contacted, how would you propose to balance that?
Well, you see, we have to distinguish between access to records on the one hand, access to a person's birth certificate or their adoption file, as compared with access to contact information. I mean, those are different things. So just because you get access to a birth certificate, which tells you where you were born and what your mother's name was and so on, that, of course, particularly in the context of mother and baby homes, is not going to tell you where that person is now living. So the way that you can balance the two is that you provide, on the one hand, you vindicate the right to identity by saying that there is an automatic entitlement to a birth certificate and an adoption file. But on the other hand, contact information would not be provided unless the birth parent would consent to the provision of that contact information. And in that way, you can provide a balance between the two. What they also do in some other jurisdictions is require a counselling session, which would brief the adopted person on the wishes of the birth parent and explain the potential consequences of not respecting those wishes.
So legislation, we're told, is on the way. Do we need legislation? Because there's some discussion that, you know, the GDPR legislation that's in place will do.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways you can go about it. And one way would be to try and deal with it exclusively under GDPR. Another way would be to enact specific legislation. So there are different ways to achieve this end. You probably need to have some level of legislation simply because there's also issues around how the records will be retained and where they will be held. And some of those issues would need to be dealt with as well. So there probably will need to be some level of legislation. But exactly how that legislation approaches the issue, whether it does it as a standalone piece or whether it does it very much through the medium of GDPR. There are different options on the table, and I know the Department of Children are working very hard to explore those options and to establish what the best way forward is.
OK, I just want to bring in my panel. Minister, can I put to you that when Roderick O'Gorman said this week that we would get to legislative scrutiny stage with this legislation before the end of the year, a lot of people were quite dismayed at that time frame. Do we really need that length of time to draft this you know, discrete piece of legislation?
I know that this legislation, it is a top priority for Minister O'Gorman, and I know that intensive work is already underway in relation to that. So I know there is a real urgency around it, but at the same time, there's a real need to get this right to ensure that we take all the concerns of those involved, and that whatever legislation is put in place, that it is robust, it's workable, and we're not coming back here, you know, in a few months' time half-baked legislation. So it is a top priority for him, and I know that he's working closely with the AG on this.
Can I ask then about the redress, the matter of redress? Your committee could have a function, a role in this, couldn't it, Kathleen?
Yeah. Can I just say firstly that we definitely need to see access to birth certificates and to both state records and any sort of files that are held on people who were adopted, whether that was through the homes, and there was a huge amount of forced adoptions that took place well outside of the home. So all adopted people need to have access to their birth certs, to their files, to their records. And I would agree with the point that Conor was making, that it's very different giving someone access to their birth cert and their information than actually saying, here's a telephone number for somebody.
And the reality is, though, in Ireland, you can't track down people.
Well, no, look, the reality is there's a huge amount of people out there that haven't been able to track anybody down and that are still looking for either children or mothers, and it's totally unacceptable what happened in those homes and what happened to anybody that was in either the mother and baby homes, or actually mother and baby institutions they really should be called, or detention centres, and people who were put into those forced adoption situations. It was a human rights abuse. And there's no point in apologising this week unless we're actually going to get it right now and ensure that people have access to their information and their records. And yes, the Children's Committee, obviously, anything that we would decide, we'd decide as the committee. I do chair it, but it's a committee decision, and it's an excellent committee.
But what about the fact that one of the criticisms of, say, the Clan Project would have had of the commission was that it didn't allow any public hearings. Some residents did want to tell their story,
of course,
in public,
yeah.
And Clan wanted to make a submission in public, and that didn't happen. So could this happen now at your committee?
First of all, I totally agree with the point they were making. I do think it's important for people to have the access to tell their stories publicly. I certainly would be open to that. As I say, I would never make a decision on behalf of the committee. We'd have to discuss it. But I think everybody on that committee wants to see the right thing done. And, you know,
would there be legal implications there, though?
I think that the same committee rules would apply. And I just make this final point that there was a number of really good recommendations made from the Collaborative Forum back in 2018 in relation to identity and information. They've never been acted upon. So in relation to something taking an awful lot of time, there's a huge amount of work done already. There's people that have been dealing with this since as far back as 2001, speaking to various ministers about it. So there is a lot of work done. It doesn't necessarily take a huge amount of time to get it right.
Okay, Breed, I know you're dying to get in. I just want to ask Conor, because he has the legal expertise there. Would that be an option, Conor, in terms of allowing a forum like an Oireachtas committee to bring in survivors and former residents of these homes to tell their stories?
I think it would, and I think what I would particularly like to see an Oireachtas committee involved with would be the process of formulating whatever redress scheme is devised. The state's track record on designing redress schemes for historical injustice is appalling, and has repeatedly designed schemes which have made matters worse rather than better, have excluded people unfairly, have re-traumatised people, and it's incredibly important that we don't repeat those errors, and it's incredibly important that there's trust in what is devised. You know, the timeline that's been given of doing this by the end of April is welcome to have a firm timeline. You know, if you compare that, for example, to the redress scheme for sexual abuse in schools after the Louise O'Keefe case, it has been rumbling on for 7 years, and 18 months after that was found to fail to comply with that judgment. We have no timeline on when they're going to reopen that scheme. So, you know, it would be it's good to have a firm timeline, but it would also be important to have some transparency around how that process develops and how those decisions are made, and to allow survivors to have an input into that so that it isn't seen as another one of these exercises which is
imposed,
conducted really out of sight and designed to contain cost above all else.
Okay, Breach.
Well, this report is a disgrace, the way it was managed in its publication, in how the survivors were treated, the webinar that was held, the leak that went to the press in advance. But also, when we talk about identities and the right to identity in your history, they have that right, and absolutely there's no point in dragging out the length of time for legislation to give them that. But now this report has stolen their narrative. It repeatedly says that there's no evidence of abuse, that there's no evidence of forced adoption, and it dismisses the witnesses who painfully went through the process of giving their story to the commission, and it just takes the story and throws it out. Talk about an insult on top of injury. It should be rejected in its entirety, and the institutions who are burying evidence, who have refused to hand over papers and records and archives, must be compelled to do so. Okay. We could be witnessing crime scenes here with over 9,000 dead babies.
Okay, and just to repeat, as I said at the start of this, we did ask the Commission if they would give us a statement or a spokesperson, but they said they would not be commenting on their own report.